Coming up on Digital Music Trends 199, recorded live at Berlin Music Week 2014 on the 4th of September, we talk about recorded music sales in the first half of 2014, music and brands, VidZone, music tech startups, YouTube donations, and a peek at the hot topics of the conference program. This week's show is brought to you by Play MPE. Check out daily.plaympe.com for the latest Play MPE releases, charts, news, and more. Hello everyone and welcome to Digital Music Trends, recording live from Berlin Music Week. Thanks for coming to the session today, and if you've never come across the show before, go and check out digitalmusictrends.com. I'm Andrea Leonelli and I produce podcasts covering the latest news and the most interesting companies in the music tech industry. And the shows have been running since 2009 with hundreds of guests to date, and I'm joined today actually by four new guests that have never been on the show before, so that's super exciting, and thanks so much for joining me today. And we start with Janine Wilker from FineTunes. And Janine, I wanted to ask you briefly what you do at FineTunes and what FineTunes is about in about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Okay, 30 seconds starting now. FineTunes is a digital distributor from the independent world. And we are working with about like 3,500 labels internationally right now, covering all digital distribution services. And my job is the strategic marketing. So I'm there for creating strategic cooperations with magazines, media partners, and as well, I'm covering the sales marketing for the French market.
Great. It's great to have you. And second, we have Benjamin Lebrave. Am I pronouncing correctly?
Lebrave.
Perfect. Either one founder of Aquaba Music, a streamlined platform for distribution and promotion of African music content. So how did that start out?
I came to realize about 7 years ago that music released, recorded and released in most countries in Africa is really difficult to get a hand of if you're not there. So I tried to fill that gap, and 7 years later I'm still doing it. So what that means is I'm based in Accra, Ghana. I travel whenever I can to different parts of the continent. And I try to work with artists to put out their music internationally, mostly online, working with companies like FineTunes, and promoting it, making sure it's on the radio, helping them get tours, and you know, doing what most artists do everywhere in the world.
Awesome. And we have Fiona Okumu on the show, which is great to meet you. We're actually fellow Londoners, but we never met before, so that's
it's
kind of crazy, right? And Fiona, you run a great site on African pop music, and it's called Afripop, and also do a bunch of different other things. You work with Social Media Week in South Africa and freelance journalist as well. So anything else you want to tell us about, or maybe tell us a little bit about Afripop as well?
Well, yeah, I do a lot of things, don't I? Yeah, so I at Afripop magazine, which is, as the name implies, it's a global popular culture, well, global African music and popular culture site. We started it, myself and my partner Yolanda. She's based in New York, and I'm based in London some of the time. And so we got together, and we just thought, you know, we're looking online and we never really saw magazines that reflected the reality of being an African person in all these big cosmopolitan spaces, places like New York, like London, like Berlin, you know, just no places that were fun and just kind of reflecting what we were doing in fashion, in film, in music. So we just decided to start a blog between the two of us. And then since then, we've kind of grown to a team of about eight.
Wow, that's fantastic.
From the continent and in the diaspora.
That's great. And last but not least, we have Michael Krause from Deezer. So hi, Michael. And can you tell us a little bit about what you do at Deezer?
Yeah, of course. So I co-founded the German streaming service Empire, which we merged together with Deezer actually this week.
Great.
Yeah, very exciting times. Deezer is the largest music streaming provider, music streaming service in terms of paid music streaming when it comes to coverage. So we are in 180 countries. We have the largest catalog, and in terms of subscribers, also the second largest. And I'm heading up the GSA team, so the German-speaking territories.
Yes, so Germany, Switzerland, and Austria.
Forget Austria.
For those that are home and might not know what GSA is. And so I wanted to start today by talking about some of the figures that have transpired in the past few weeks when it comes to recorded music sales in the first half of 2014. So in the USA, we've seen the lowest recorded music album sales to date. So unfortunately, we've seen Nielsen SoundScan released the figures in the past few days talking about that, and they said that it's the first time ever that album sales fell below the 4 million units sold in a week number. So this unfortunately feels like a bit more of a pattern than just a little blip. For example, the first 8 weeks of Q3, third quarter of 2014, the sales in the USA have seen a weekly average decrease by 500,000 units over the first quarter of last year. So a pretty broad decrease in sales across the board there. And so, you know, first of all, we are seeing this decline in the USA, which is kind of broadly related to the advent of streaming, and you know, people are correlating a few different things here. But at the same time, in Germany, for example, we've seen similar figures come out about the first half of 2014, but they're much better in the sense that it's only a minus 0.8 decline. The CD sales have only declined about 3%, 3.6% compared to last year, and you know, the physical market is still so strong, although, you know, streaming, of course, is growing. It grew 77%, I believe. And so taking these two completely different markets, Michael, maybe let's start with you, coming from Deezer. Are we looking here at different markets that are struggling through a transition but may eventually end up in the same place? You know, for example, we've seen the Nordic countries are being heralded as an example in this case, although some people argue that it's a very different situation. So what are your thoughts, and how do you think these different, very different markets will evolve?
Yeah. I mean, actually, I think that, of course, I have to say that, but I strongly believe in that personally, that music streaming will be the dominant way to consume music in the next years, depending on the country. There are certain stages of evolvement, how far the countries are. And in these certain stages of evolvement of those countries, you see certain drops and then growing numbers in recorded music. So, of course, if the download area kicked in, then the recorded music in terms of CD sales usually went down a bit because people were able to choose and not have to buy whole albums again to get the single they like and so on. With music streaming, you probably have a same or a different factor that especially the strong music listeners and so the strong music buyers as well use streaming first. So there might be a first like short drop in the numbers. But once you turn music streaming, and that's actually our vision and our mission as well, to turn streaming into mainstreaming, then you will see rising numbers again. Because, I mean, a music streaming customer who uses a premium product, they usually invest about €120 in Europe, for example. So that's a lot compared to the average figures that a download or CD buyer would have spent in a year. So if we can turn all those customers into music streaming lovers, which we do, hopefully, then the market will benefit from that for sure.
Yeah. And Janine, I wanted to ask you about this sort of double dip that we had. In a sense, you know, first we had the dip, you know, due to piracy and also to different things and people moving to digital and the kind of physical sales. At one point, it felt like a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, revenues were starting to increase again, and it felt like downloads were catching up to the decline in sales. And now, because the streaming is becoming so prevalent, we're seeing another blip because, of course, the industry is catching up again to this new medium. So from a fine-tuned perspective, having this sort of overall perspective on how things are evolving in the marketplace, how do you see this moving forward? Maybe if you want to grab that.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly like that. We are seeing this more kind of less second blip. People are transitioning, definitely. Technically, it's there. I mean, streaming is there, and it's a wonderful opportunity to use as much music as you want. It's easy. You don't have to store any files on your computer, and when you do not have a computer or a device, you can't listen to it. So it makes it a great experience, and fortunately for our customers, we are seeing that downloads are more or less stable. Yep. Even if we are finding, I mean, even in France, there is like a 10% dip when it comes to digital downloads. Streaming is on the rise, definitely. But for us, it's right now, the task is not too much to educate labels about streaming and that they need to be on there, but the thing for us is to really find different strategies for different genres and niche genres to right. cope with this transition. Because, I mean, for a jazz label, it's pretty hard to cope with the streaming factor because they really have to... Yeah, to tier their fans to the platform and make them listen to the stuff over and over again. And this is this feels kind of hard. So for us, the task right now is to really get away from this single product album thing, one album a year, promote that, and then hopefully that will sell and bring the success for the artist, but to really find proper marketing strategies and marketing plans, and we are doing that a lot. I mean, we are more, kind of less, since 11 years, we are in the market, and we are creating a lot of planning, strategies, timelines, and different product packagings to cope with these transitions. And I think this is the big task to have a kind of pool of material from an artist or a label and then make it work on the different platforms, not only business model-wise, but also on the different streaming platforms. Like, make it work on Deezer, make it work on Spotify, make it work on Wimp. And this means that it's not the same streaming product, but even the streaming product is a different one in any case. So for us, it's really, we're seeing that the market is... It's getting more and more atomized in a way, and we have to put a lot more effort in it. But with the right strategy, we are hoping and we are pretty optimistic to offer really successful solutions to almost every label from every genre.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, the African market is incredibly interesting because there's so much... is so different from, you know, what we're used to in Europe and North America, for example, because in some of the territories there wasn't actually ever a particularly thriving music industry, but these new technologies actually are allowing artists to start making money off their music perhaps for the first time. So Benjamin, can you tell us a little bit more about that and how you see streaming playing into Africa, if it can make a dent, and how so?
Yep. You know, just as a transition, one thing that I'll mention about streaming, because I find it very interesting. The music. So I promote music. Let's just make it simple. I live in Ghana. Let's just focus on Ghanaian music. So I work with top Ghanaian artists, and I put their music on Deezer, iTunes, etc. When I started 5 years ago, iTunes was maybe 80 or 85% of the digital revenue. Now it's probably about a third. And the combination of Deezer, Spotify, and YouTube... is enormous. And I think that has to do with the fact that, in a way, the music, even though for some people what I promote is very niche, it's also very much mainstream, very pop-driven, very hits-driven. So it's kind of immediate music, and people want it right now, and they may want it, you know, 50 times a day. And even though they may not buy it, they're still consuming. So I think that's interesting. But now, in Ghana, so the industry in Ghana is actually very different, but there was a market. Maybe it's particular to Ghana and a handful of other countries, but there's been a recording industry. There were big CD sales. I couldn't quote you numbers, but I know that you used to see CD shops everywhere, and there was major distributors. And at the time, I met some of the distributors, and you know, they have big cars and big offices, and it was an industry. It collapsed entirely, and it wasn't a matter of percentage points per quarter. It just collapsed. It's gone entirely. What's really interesting, though, is people have entirely moved on, and no one regrets it. Some people who still want to, you know, distribute items, now they distribute cell phones or SIM cards or whatever, so they're still doing that. But in terms of music, it's now entirely digital. And in a way, it feels kind of post-distribution because no one's even trying to make money from distribution. It's strictly shows or endorsements. And I think probably Fiona could tell us more about that. But I think in most countries now, it's all about endorsements. I know Deezer is coming to Ghana in a few weeks, and I know it's expanding in Africa. I don't know how effective it'll be. I don't know, because the amount of people who have a phone which can stream and people who want to download or who want to listen on a phone. I mean, everyone has a phone, but not everyone, I think, would be in a position to buy a service, a streaming service.
Yeah.
Because you need a, you know, more high-tech phone, etc. So I don't know. I really don't know how big it'll be. But certainly, I feel in some ways the industry is absolutely thriving.
Fantastic. And Fiona, so to take up from Benjamin's point, how do you feel things are progressing in different territories, and how are artists breaking through, essentially?
So it's interesting. I feel like it's very early days as far as streaming, as the, there's absolutely no comparison between what is happening in Europe and in America and what is happening in Africa. And I'll speak, for example, in South Africa. There is a big scramble. You know, Deezer is there now. Spotify, I think, is headed there. SimFi is there. So all of them are headed there. But I think everyone is still really just trying to figure it out because, you know, things like broadband penetration is very low in Africa. Streaming costs are still extremely high. So, you know, for those kinds of companies to make it in Africa, they're just going to need to figure out a different model. I think the service providers are going to have to come in with a different way to charge people for data, for things like that, in order for it to be a success. And like Benjamin said, it's very much about the endorsement deal for a lot of the African artists. I, for one, I mean, in South Africa, yes, there was a time when, you know, your biggest selling artist would sell 100,000 copies. That's a big number for the industry. And that's for, you know, as you know this as well, like piracy is quite rife in Africa. So it does feel like, in a way, the streaming and the mobile phone options are a little bit more, they address the issue of piracy more than what used to happen with CDs. Because I feel like there, in as much as artists sold, there was a lot more that they could have made in sales and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love how we managed to go from talking about declining album sales in the US to talking about digital music in Ghana here. That's how it works. And so moving on to talking about one of the hot topics here at Berlin Music Week, actually, it's quite a good segue to talk about discoverability. And so more than, I don't want to talk about discovery from the user perspective, because I'm sure everybody has probably read and heard so much about that. But I want to talk about discoverability from the perspective of the artists. And so, you know, with millions of new tracks coming out every day, editorial, you know, room on services is very scant at the moment, and we're not there yet in terms of, you know, services really being able to successfully recommend niche artists to niche audiences and identifying those kind of things. So Benjamin, maybe starting with you, you know, you were talking about the fact that you still have big hits, but, you know, of course catering to a fairly specific market. So how do you push them through in services like Spotify, for example, or Deezer?
The honest answer would be, I don't know, but I'll try to give you more. It's a struggle. I mean, every day I ask myself, and I've been doing it now for 5 years, and I put out about 50 releases. With every release, I ask myself, who am I going to target? Who's interested in this? So it's a matter of identifying blogs like Afropop, being patient, being thorough and insisting, and little by little it comes. I mean, I think it maybe there's other ways to do it. In my case, I've done it by hand. I don't hire PR companies.
Yeah.
It takes time, but eventually, I feel once you actually do identify an audience or even just a blog, there could be a really strong connection. Because once people say, okay, so what you send me makes sense, fine. And then you have this privileged relationship. But I haven't found any miracle solution. For me, it's work.
And that's really interesting what you're saying, because some people, you know, are perceiving services as, you know, the start and end point of a journey for listeners, whilst, you know, what you're saying is that listeners actually find out about the music elsewhere and then use the services as a tool to consume the music, which is quite a different thing. So, Giannini, in your experience, you know, of course, there's the usual hustle and bustle of calling up services and saying, oh, could you give us a spot on the new releases of this week or something like that? But aside from that, what are the tools that you think are most effective to driving people to streaming services and discovering new bands there?
The funny thing is, to a certain extent, I completely agree with Benjamin here, because there is no template you could simply use. And if you're using that, and if you're sticking to this and that specific timeline and communication plan, then it will work. So this is exactly what I meant by, we are trying to invest the time to check with every licensor, with every label, for the highlight releases, what can we do around this release? And timing is a crucial point here, because, I mean, when you look at when you need to start to plan campaigns and plan strategies, so what you're gonna do, then half a year is nothing, pretty much. So what we are doing, we are trying on a very, very early stage to have a very close relationship with our labels and learn more about the artist, diving really into the product, into the music, and seeing exactly those questions, like, where's my target group, where are my fans, does it make sense to have a crowdfunding campaign, whatever. Where should I go on tour? Where are like multiplicators in the market, blog-wise, magazine-wise, radio-wise? Are there any contacts I can use? What's in there for promotion and marketing? And so we are really specific on then collecting all that kind of info and trying to give it a boost with the templates and the tools we are having with different platforms. And I mean, there is a lot of discussion that, you know, streaming, it pays nothing, and you, of course, you can't make a living of it and all that kind of stuff. But our experience is that this is right now, at the moment, for certain artists and genres, it's definitely still true, unfortunately. But we have many labels who just dived into the possibilities, and they really try to use every tool which is offered by the platforms. And there are a lot of things you can do on streaming platforms. And it's really about the combination. It's your success will not be defined by how am I presented in a playlist of Spotify or of Deezer. This is just one single part of the game. And this is what I meant with that labels, I mean, nowadays labels, they have so many jobs to do. It's really like, it's a complete business. And then you have the whole creative part, which of course needs to be covered and wants to be covered. So we're trying to be a partner who invests a lot of time, first of all, and then also tries to think about advances and where we can help. But it's really about time, diving in the music. So we are not, and that's the funny part, it's not this business anymore where you just get copies of music, you see, oh well, it's pop, oh it sells. So you really have to work with the music again. Maybe that's a kind of aspect which is a good thing, although right now it's a pretty shaky situation in the market.
Sure.
It's about the right partners, it's about working with the release, it's about the timing, and it's about the proper strategies and trying to find these little tiny things to make it work.
Absolutely.
And it takes a lot of time. I mean, you start with a promotion at the beginning of the year, and in December you're still talking with platforms. So we are not having this small product life cycle or promotion, and when the promotion is through, we are forgetting about the release. It's really...
In a sense, Michael... Do you find that, of course, you're doing a lot of work on the editorial point of view, but do you find that the editorial space, in a sense, or, you know, the space on the front page of Deezer is almost working a bit like, you know, the old physical retail stores, where essentially it's kind of pre-booked in advance, in a sense, because you know about releases? No.
I mean, that's a very thankful question for us, actually, because Deezer works in a way that we have editors in all the countries, in most of the countries. So we have a combination of algorithms who will propose to you automatically what you like on Facebook, what you listen to, and so on. So the techie part. But then you have the human factor, like really editors looking at certain clusters. So not what's in the charts all the time, but looking at clusters, for example, those three customers who listen to those four jazz music artists. So then Janina comes along with a new jazz music artist that's the same, then they will have that in their feed. So not like what's in the charts, but really what the editors picked for that kind of cluster. And looking for opportunities within Deezer to promote artists, there are many things. First of all, we have a great CRM CRM possibilities, so we can target via email or in the feed on a very detailed level. Like, for example, you can send an email to all those customers who listen to those three tracks if you think that the new track or the new album that's coming out is matching that. Or other like things that are not used so often but are very, very effective are playlists. So if your artist creates a playlist of the songs he likes best, then you will get a lot of visibility, and you can also promote, if you also like then integrate songs from your label, you can also promote new artists, or those artists, like those famous artists, can promote and endorse actually the younger and new artists.
Yeah.
So I can like continue for half an hour to explain. There's so many possibilities.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
I encourage labels and also even artist managements to just look at the possibilities and then work with that, because there's so many possibilities that is not about the charts. It's not about the physical sales charts that are going well. Yeah.
Fiona, you talk to artists probably on a daily basis because of the blog. And so how are they looking at the streaming services? Are they looking at you as the place that is going to help them reach the audience, and then the audience is just going to go to the streaming service by default? Or are they actually, you know, concerned about their positioning on the platforms themselves.
So just to add on Michael's point about the human factor, I think you can't emphasize that part of promotion enough. So, for example, I do a playlist for a service called 22 Tracks. I don't know if you guys know it. And what it does is essentially it picks the tastemakers in different scenes and it gets them to select what's hot. And what I specifically do is I do a mix of what's hot in terms of the charts, but also what's hot in terms of what's coming up. So I think a very useful strategy for labels, for artists, is to actually make sure you know the people who are the influencers in the culture. I think word of mouth is one of the more kind of organic and the more believable ways that the music can grow. And then, so our artists coming to us to break their music all the time. And I think that, you know, you can't play everybody. We do what we call a filtering service. So what we put on Afropop is what we think is the best or what deserves an ear. Other sites do everything. They'll put everything on and you kind of just hope for the best and get on there. But we kind of position ourselves as curators so that when labels come to us, they know exactly what the service is that we can offer them and artists and everyone else.
Yeah. I wanted to take sort of jump onto a new story, but sort of stay on a similar theme, because yesterday, for example, CD Baby announced the release of a CD Baby free service where artists can go and upload their music for free, essentially, to all the different services, but they're going to give a 15% commission on the sales to CD Baby, which is higher than what they would usually charge. So I was interested in this sort of vein, because that's not the only company that's done something like this. There's other companies that have done free distribution deals, and it's interesting because it lowers the barriers of access in an interesting way for countries, certain countries in Africa, for example, where a $50 upfront fee would not be feasible for people to be able to pay, or you know, even just access to credit cards is restricted, and so people wouldn't be able to just pay by credit card for distributing their music on a worldwide basis. So, Benjamin, do you think that might have an effect, this lowering of the barriers for worldwide distribution on who releases what, and maybe open access to more people to more markets?
I can't help but wear my label hat and say probably it'll just crowd the market with even more crap that I wish were not in the stores. But with that said, maybe there's some good stuff. But in the case of Africa, I think the difficulty you said is more the credit cards than the money. There's maybe this misconception that artists in Africa are broke, and that it's not true. The money they invest, even a small-time artist, the money they invest in studio time, etc., in radio, payola, all that stuff is huge. The problem is in certain countries, like in Ghana, it's difficult to have access to an international Visa card. You cannot get PayPal. You can't, just period. Nigeria, Ghana, and some other countries, Cote d'Ivoire, you can't. So there becomes this kind of ridiculous threshold, which is that you must work with a foreign entity just to have the financial link, which seems totally unfair, but that's how it is. But more broadly, I think in the case of Ghana, a lot of the music is already up in the stores. I don't know if this would. I think the only thing it would do is then artists would come up to me and say, "Hey, why are you doing it this way when I can do it myself?" And it'll be hard for me to justify that. It's fine to have your music in iTunes, but if no one else is pushing it,
exactly,
iTunes and Deezer, etc. If no one's pushing it, it's absolutely pointless. And then it makes, and as I started saying, I think then it makes our jobs more difficult because we're trying to push what we think is relevant content. And, you know, there's just more gray matter out there.
Just to add on to what Benjamin is saying, online, and, you know, I'm very, you know, hands-on in terms of online promotion and stuff. But in Africa, and I'm speaking of Africa in a homogenous Pan-African sense, even though the markets are different from region to region, but traditional media still plays a very big part in how music is promoted, how it's distributed. So MTV and Channel O and Trace TV, you know, the big music channels are a big part of kind of carrying the music down the distribution line, the promotion and stuff. So you can't ignore that sorry about that. You can't really ignore that part of, in as much as you can employ an online or a digital strategy, you must be aware that that is, you still need radio, you still need TV, you need all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to fuse two stories together here because time is running very quickly. I'm like, whoa, it's the time already. So another thing that I wanted to talk about was release of a new feature by This Is My Jam, which is a startup based in London, which came out of the Echo Nest. If anybody's familiar with the Echo Nest, This Is My Jam is essentially a service that allows users to pick one song that they want to listen to, that is their favorite track for that day or that week or that month, and essentially that allows them to build a history of all the tracks that they've favorited over the last few years. I don't know if anybody's used This Is My Jam here before. No? No. Okay. So they've released essentially a catalog of the 500,000 tracks that were favorited by somebody somewhere at some point on the service. And for them, this is sort of like a distillation of the millions and millions of tracks that are available on services like Deezer, and a way for people to navigate that catalog a little bit better, perhaps, you know, by providing also some genre classification in the future and playlisting and stuff. So, Michael, we're talking about, you know, CD Baby, the fact that there might be even more artists coming on board because they don't even need to put the money up front to put the release up. And on the other hand, seeing a service like This Is My Jam creating 500,000 tracks, this is what you need to listen to because people have chosen it as their track for a particular moment. How do you see those two things coming together, and how do you feel it is going to come together on Deezer?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I believe strongly in the kind of democratic approach to music. So whoever produces music should have the right to have an audience for that, if it's through live shows or if it's through Deezer. We don't judge what's crap and what's not crap. And if someone finds an audience for these songs and promotes it by himself, we're happy. If music makes people happy, we're happy. So we are open to all these kind of initiatives like CD Baby and so on. In terms of those highlighting songs, this is also a social approach, right? So what you like on Facebook, it will show up there. I have a bit different view on that. So I think music is very personal as well, to a certain extent. So I don't want to all the time post on Facebook or show whatever I'm listening, because sometimes it's really intimate and very, very personal. And I won't have the possibility, of course, to share with my friends. And these are, for example, opening a lot of possibilities to also follow your friends and so on. But you can always select what you want to share. And I guess that's very important. And if that new initiative is something where you openly share things that you like and other people can follow that and listen to that, I think it's a nice idea. But I'm not into all these things where automatic sharing...
No, that's very much you have to go on the site and you have to choose a track. It's not done automatically.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I saw it. So, yeah, it's okay. I mean, yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
That, people can like songs and so on Deezer as well, and they have all the variety of the 30 million songs. So I rather go there, but it's up to everyone to decide where they consume the music. So, yeah.
And, of course, it's all available on APIs, so I guess.
Of course, yeah.
Can be ported around.
We have a hackathon tomorrow, so all the 30 million tracks are available. So anyone has a good idea, like any startup, we're open to cooperate and also have all these in-apps where in the service we'll also feature it.
Yeah. Janine, let's pick up on this conversation around sort of a mass of music here and sort of more curated, restricted catalog here. You know, how do you see this evolving, this sort of tension between a huge marketplace and a much smaller one?
Yeah, I mean, combining these two worlds in a way is a part of our job. I find it kind of funny that everyone is seeing this new CD Baby thing as cheap, because it isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, ask a proper digital distributor about his contracts, and all the ones I know in the German market, whether it's Konto New Media, whether it's Believe, whether it's Zibrolution, whether it's FineTunes, it's not about 50-50 share, it's about 80-20 share, and you don't have a very, very small, like €3 or even less setup fee for a release. And the best is, you're getting the sales marketing for free. Hooray. So why not ask distributors who are out there? And they might seem big and international firms, but we are really listening to every submission we are getting. We have labels that have 2 albums out since 5 years. We have labels with a catalog of over like 5,000 releases. And it's not about catalog size, it's not about genres, it's about the music, it's about how passionate someone is. If he wants to work on his stuff, then we are up for trying to see what we can do to support that in whichever way, which also is recommendations. I mean, I totally agree with you that the thing is very personal. So my recommendations, for example, are coming from my favorite record store where I'm buying my vinyls. It's coming from Accelerator or 22 Tracks. It's coming from Giles Peterson websites. It's coming from Hypebot or Hypetrack. It's coming from magazines and online blogs. And there is not the one way to discover music. I mean, you're talking with your friends about something. For me, still, recommendation algorithms like Spotify, they're not going to work until now, because I'm a huge jazz fan, and if I'm listening to Freddie Hubbard, and then the services are telling me, well, why not check out the new album by Freddie Hubbard? And you know there is no new album since, obviously. So this is still shaky, so I love to ask someone in person, or I check out a blog, the Jazz Thing blog, or whatever. Sure. So what I want to say is that it's a combination of many different things where you get your recommendations from, and if this is my jam works to a certain extent, to a certain part, and afterwards you maybe go on Deezer and create your own playlist because you really like what you heard there, why not? I mean, absolutely. We'll see.
And I think, you know, we're running out of time, unfortunately, already. But one thing that I want to touch upon was talking about transparency. So I think if there's any artists in the room here, you'll probably be aware of all the issues that have been around in the last sort of 18 to 24 months around transparency and fairness in digital music. So we heard complaints from the independent community over YouTube's tactics in the licensing. We talked about the question marks around whether some of the value generated by digital music services is locked in by majors before the pie is shared with independents. I know that Merlin had spoken about this a few months back. And you know, we also talked about how reporting is still a big issue. I don't know if there's any labels in the room, but you know, that the microtransactional aspect of streaming means that the reports are still huge, very difficult to ingest and very difficult to audit as well, in a sense. So, you know, I think this is going to progress thanks to the progress of technology, hopefully. But Michael, what is your take? And you know, so how are you working with, for example, smaller labels to make the information a bit more digestible?
I mean, in general, I can say that that I'm very confident that Deezer is not only pushing chart music, which is always one criticism, that the smaller artists are getting less because the major part of the cake is going to these chart musicians. So we really we also have this Young Guns app where we even support totally unknown artists and push them. And we have this recommendation as I explained, and the flow functionality, a feature where you can just listen to new stuff all the time. So there's all these newcomers in. So we really push also unknown artists or smaller artists. So that can't be this can't be the case for Deezer at least. In terms of technology, of course, it's a huge catalog and there are a lot of plays, especially if you go in 180 countries like we are. Of course, the reports going to fine tunes can be a bit larger. But it's all like it's on the other side. It's still very simple, right? It's like the place you have per artist, and then you get your label pool share. So I think it's more or less take some time to become market standard for those new reports. It also was a big hassle when the download business started, and there were new XML formats coming in and new ways to distribute. So technology is of course evolving with the technology of distribution evolving. So technology of reporting, and everyone has to adapt. And if they are not able to do so, I mean, they are very good and easy available partners or service providers who could easily help on that. And that's not like ruining all the margin, because the business model is adapted already. So I don't think this is really the issue of the industry. And then one thing that has always been like a big discussion is how much labels or distributors are paying out to the artists. Discussion on that. So of course that's not in our hand as a streaming provider, but of course their transparency will probably help to be more fair there in some cases. But as we see, like 80-20 sounds like also a great deal. So I don't think that over the long run it will be an issue. It's probably more transition thing.
Yeah, and I guess we have only a few minutes, but quickly, Janine, on your front, how are you dealing with having to get reports from everybody in a different way? Everything, you know, millions of different streams, you know, trying to figure out whether people are paying you correctly. Is that an issue for you or not at this point? Or have you developed the technology necessary to keep track of everything?
I know, when you started with saying the term YouTube, I mean, we have to differentiate between the standard accounting, which is going on every day, and the negotiations about political and legal things.
So, of course, yeah.
But when it comes to accountability, for us, it's not a problem when the metadata is properly done, which is the... This is, I mean, metadata are the crown jewels of the industry still, and they will always be. So when we have a proper set of metadata, it's almost no problem with all of the standard legal big stores to have proper reportings. You could easily sort. So we have different importers, different XML interfaces, importers for every shop, which is checked and created when the shop is within the FineTunes network, and it's constantly updated. So for us, this transparency subject is a very important one, because we are coming from a strict independent background, and it has always been our goal to provide the best statements and in the fastest way. I mean, we are doing monthly statements and payments to the artists, and if there are issues, we have a quality management system, quality assurance in the different departments, whether it's accounting, whether it's tech, digital logistics, or whether it's the product management. So of course this is constantly evolving, and the funny thing is when you look at companies like ALV, this accounting software, which is then working on the labels end to make the data more accessible and sortable and analyzable for one man label, with having certain startups in that area of back office solutions for labels.
That will help.
That will help. So I don't think there's a problem.
Benjamin, for you, of course, it's your own, you know, your own label, and so have you encountered problems in figuring out or even just opening up reports when you get them or anything like that?
Yeah, the reports are, as you said, tedious to look into. One thing I wish I had access to, and it's a question I can ask the both of you, in this world where we're always talking about issues with privacy and how every user is tracked and how we can determine patterns and what everyone does, when it comes to music services, I, as a label guy, get absolutely nothing. I can see what streams on each platform, fine. I can see how many downloads, but I have no idea if I get repeat users. I have no idea about specific territories. There's a lot of, I mean, specific, I can know nationally. I don't know per city. I can't say, oh, this guy is, you know, if I look at the numbers in France, I have no idea if I get, let's say, 1 million streams of a certain song. Is it, how many people are actually streaming it? Which cities are they in? Are they in Paris? Are they all over the country? There's a lot of stuff that I'm sure provide the services have access to, which we labels still don't have access to. I'm sure it's a lot of work on the distributor side, on your side, but I'm kind of wondering when is it going to be available, since that's something that I have access to directly with SoundCloud, with Bandcamp, with every other service that I deal with directly. So I'm not paid by a service like SoundCloud, but the amount of information I can get from it, for me, is priceless. And it helps me determine a lot of the strategy of the label and where I'm going to push the artists.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I guess you might have actually more data on who visits the blog from where for a certain artist, and actually know a little bit more about the fans in a strange way.
Sure.
So many options.
Thank you. But I think it's different things that I'm looking for compared to what he needs. You know, I've got Google Analytics, which breaks down every single thing that I need. So, you know, I don't know.
And have you ever heard from an artist that wanted to ask you, you know, if a blog gets up or a review gets particular heat, has anybody ever asked you a breakdown of where the views are coming from?
No. Surprisingly, nobody ever asks that kind of data. It's always just, you know, the interaction just ends with, can you play my song?
That's interesting, because I guess if the one person came, you might actually be able to give them the data pretty easily.
That's right. That's right. Blogs would have that.
That's interesting.
I also have analytics on my own site, and I could ask blogs individually, but in terms of trends for sales or for services,
I
have no idea. You know, and I could ask Fiona which, if there's a link to iTunes, what kind of, how many users go there, etc. But still, it's one dot in an ocean.
Yeah, I mean, Pandora has been promising a service that will break down where people are playing music for years now. Hopefully, that's coming fairly soon. I know, you know, these are working so much on the data that I would imagine something like that is probably in the works.
Yeah, I mean, it's first of all a very good sign that you're interested in those data, because it seems that you're like data driven, and that's probably the way to go on streaming services as well. So actually, of course, we have a lot of data. Some are personal data, which we of course can't give away. We're very strict on the personality of the data, but there's of course data that can be shared, which is kind of then neutral, and we're always happy to discuss with labels to see, okay, what can we take out of the data, what can we learn together out of that, and how does it help to, for example, create new campaigns and so on. So we work very data driven and happy to share that. Yeah.
Absolutely, that's fantastic. And one last thing I wanted to talk about, I guess. Let's talk a little bit about startups. And, you know, we have people from different backgrounds here, and it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts. You know, we're here in Berlin, one of the European startup hubs, you know, home of SoundCloud and a bunch of other services, you know, Ableton started here as a startup, essentially, although it's not a startup anymore. And, you know, Deezer, I guess, is not technically a startup anymore. It's been around for a while. It's got quite a few hundred employees. But, you know, how are you seeing, first in your respective cities and perhaps in the region that you're in, the evolution of the startup community when it comes to music? Is there a community? Are people interested in tech and music? And if so, what are they doing about it? So maybe, Fiona, if you want to start, because you might have a good overview of what's going on in London as opposed to what's going on in some of the territories that you work with in Africa as well.
Well, I can mention specific startups that I'm interested in how they're evolving. And two of them, the ones that I quite like, are from Kenya. I don't know if you know much about what's happening in the Kenyan tech scene, but
it's
pretty much a leader in what's happening for technology in Africa. They are leading the way in terms, you know, so M-Pesa, which is the way that they pay for, you know, it's their mobile money system, is how they pay for everything. And basically it revolutionized payment in Africa. So people don't really use banking as much as they use mobile payment. So now companies like Wabe, which is a music startup, and another one called Mdundo, they figured out that, you know, for us to be successful, we have to use familiar payment systems in order for the market to respond to what we're doing. So, you know, most of their payments, like 60% of their payments, will come from M-Pesa rather than Visa cards or PayPal. The options are there, but people, you know, will go to what they know in order to buy their ringtones and stuff like that. So for me, in terms of startup communities, Kenya is where I think the most exciting things are happening technologically. And that's really it. You, what do you think?
Again, I'll speak more particularly in the case of Ghana.
Sure.
Ghana is now coming, and I'm hoping that in the next years it's going to, kind of push for tech. It's a very connected country, but it's still not a super active country in terms of startups. But there are music startups. I haven't come across any service that I thought was really groundbreaking, but I think what Fiona said is very important. A lot of it's going to break down to how is stuff paid for, and how does the payment come across. And I think something like streaming, when stuff seems free, that's a big advantage, I think. Another thing I would say, and I don't know if it really answers your question, but I see a lot of startups and I see a lot of good ideas, but what I see as a user in Ghana is service that's very unreliable. So when it's difficult to make a call, probably you won't be able to stream a song. I don't know when, so that's, I don't know if that's going to put a lot of pressure on the providers. I don't know how it's going to pan out, but I don't see realistically in the immediate future how this kind of sophisticated service could possibly work.
Yeah. That's fascinating. I really know very little. I need to learn more. And Michael, of course, Deezer has a pretty extensive sort of API program, and so you work with a lot of startups as well that are using Deezer tracks. And so how have you seen that evolve? Of course, you're based here in Berlin. I don't know if you've seen anything exciting recently here or elsewhere that you want to talk about.
Yeah, there are a lot of startups that we work with. As you said, we're having the API. We're at the hackathon tomorrow. So we're very open to that, open with like 50 startups already. They can use us for the apps and just integrate the music there or integrate their services within Deezer, like 22 tracks also. It's integrated. So we are very open to that. I see a lot of exciting stuff also in the crowdfunding area where concerts and so on are getting crowdfunded. I also see a lot of exciting stuff around the commerce around artists, like to see, okay, what my favorite artist is wearing, what they're drinking, which instruments they use, all these kind of e-commerce around artists. That's pretty exciting. And there's a lot of, I mean, in Berlin, you can go around every corner and find another startup that's doing something exciting. So I probably would kill the time here to mention all of them. But we're very open to working with them and to give them the audience.
Great. And Janine, from where you are based, you're in Hamburg, right?
We're in Hamburg.
And it's interesting because it's the music city, right, for Germany. It's like, in terms of industry.
You think?
Well, that's I don't great. Know. It feels like the industry
yes,
side.
Yes, we are, of course.
The industry side was very much Hamburg, right?
It was, and it is. I mean, the games thing is a bit bigger, I would say.
Right.
The games branch or the games market. But when it comes to startup things, I have to change my roles a bit right now because I'm doing a startup on my own, which is cool. Currently working in the field of having or offering a complete back office solution for labels and even smaller labels to reduce this administrative noise on their end.
Yeah.
So, and what I found, I can only talk about Hamburg right now and about my personal experiences, is that, of course, we are always looking up to Berlin because, I mean, there is a startup around every corner. You just hear a lot of success stories, and Hamburg is not there yet, but there are a lot of networks, initiatives, roundtables, private regular meetings where you could go to, and there is a lot happening in terms of networking, which is pretty important because I mean I founded this thing alone, and I'm right now in the process of finding investors, which is pretty hard because it takes a lot of money for a software driven very techy kind of startup, and it's worth a lot to know that there are roundtables you can go to, and there are people who've gone through that and who can tell you, well, ask this particular party, or why not call SAP or another big company? They have venture capital funds. So it's evolving, and it's cool to have a scene which is so open to exchange ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I was at Social Media Week in March, and it was really great.
Yeah, and it's getting away from the status of being information hiders and just working in your own little garage. And it's pretty cool to have discussions, and I think the one could help the other and have recommendations. And there we are again at the point of personal recommendations. And so I hope we are not getting only the music city of Germany, but the startup city. So we are working. Hamburg
That's great.
Is really coming.
Wolf, yeah. That's great. And we got like about 4 minutes left, and I just wanted to zoom through a couple of things because I've pre-recorded the opening of the show, which is terrible because things always end up being hijacked and you never end up being able to cover everything you want to cover. And so, first of all, Samsung rolled out a VidZone on devices across 5 major European countries. VidZone is a video streaming site, and essentially it's going to work on a variety of mobile devices, smart TVs, and tablets produced by Samsung, so users can access to a bunch of music videos that way. So they have 65,000 videos from both the major and independent labels. It had been confined to the PlayStation, so if you're a PlayStation user, you might have seen VidZone. I'm not sure if it's available in Germany or not, with 11 million downloads. And it's interesting to see another sort of UK company that is doing this kind of video stuff branch out to other countries.
Yeah, I mean, just to comment on that, on the music video side, I mean, in Germany, we saw that a lot of pure music video companies are struggling a bit. So the first had to shut down. That's Qtone from Hamburg, our friends. So it was really, really hard to see that. So pure music video platforms sometimes are struggling a bit. But there are also some promising things, like, for example, on Empire, we also had the music streaming together with the video streams. That worked well in a certain sense. This is why we've integrated Empire now as a video app now also in Deezer, just launched this week as well. And those combinations with music videos and other products like for example, with my video and Empire, these things, I strongly believe they will work. But pure standalone music video propositions where you just go and have a pre-roll and then a music video, and then another pre-roll and another music video, those will probably, especially if music streaming is getting bigger, will probably have some issues in funding or the operations that is necessary in terms of streaming, CDN, the editorial stuff, and so on. So
absolutely. No, thanks for that. And finally, the last thing was talking about YouTube. So YouTube finally rolled out this sort of crowdfunding donation more like service yesterday to five territories, USA, Mexico, Japan, and Australia. So the service will charge a 5% in fees plus a baseline fixed fee, which is 21 cents in the USA, which, you know, it's a donation button, essentially. It's like a PayPal donation button. You can donate some money. There's no opportunity to do recurring payments. You can't ask for money for anything that's happening in the future. So it's very much a right there and then, I like this video, I want to give a little bit of money to this creator, and that's about that. So I don't think it's going to compete with Kickstarter or Patreon anytime soon, but if anybody's got a super quick comment on that or...
Yeah, super quick comment would be that, yeah, it's nice that they did it. You have to pay per Google Wallet.
Yeah.
And you always have to see the bigger picture. That's my opinion. So what will it do? It will collect more data from you to be able to offer you the right videos on YouTube, connect them perfectly with Google Plus and Google Play Music offers, and to be able to completely trace the user's behavior. So if he's interested in that or this specific crowdfunding project, what does this do to all the Google Cosmos tools which are out there? So, of course, this is the next piece of the puzzle for the bigger picture of being or having consumer data, which is simply like an all-round setup of how you are behaving in the digital sense.
And on the Google systems.
especially on the Google systems, of course. And what can this bring for Google to drive revenues on their other services by selling products, by setting proper advertisement. So I think this is this has to be seen in the bigger context of completing the big Google strategy, which we all want to know.
The circle. Yeah. Close the circle. And that's it. I think, you know, a few hours ago I got an interesting press release from Wimp, who are releasing a high-quality streaming service in the UK and the US called Tidal, priced at $20 or £20. So I'm hoping to get somebody from Wimp on the show next week, which should be fun. And that's all for this week. I would like to thank so much my panel for taking part in the show. And once again, let's recap on all your websites just so that people can find it. Of course, for Michael it's Deezer.com, and from Fiona it's AfriPop.com. AfriPopMag.com, right? And Benjamin, what's your URL?
AquabaMusic.com, and Aquaba is not so easy to spell, but Google will correct it for you.
It's fine, and I will put the links in the show notes as well when this comes out. And Janine, it's FineTunes.com, right?
It's FineTunes.net.
.net, yes. Of course. Sorry again. Well, you know, at least you're here to correct me, so it's good. Thanks so much for coming down. It was great to have you here. It's kind of weird doing it live because I do it via Skype in a very small room usually. So thanks so much for coming, and thanks for listening to the DMT of this week. It comes out every week, of course. You can find it on digitalmusictrends.com. Also, remember to check the DMT one-to-one show, and this week we have a great interview with Smule talking about their new artist program. Thanks so much for listening. Have a fantastic week, and till next time.